Well, today, if I had only one sermon to preach in my life, would be on the prodigal son. And so this lesson is this week. Luke 15, I think, is the greatest chapter personally to me in the Bible, because it gives the ultimate message of how much God cares for us. Jesus wants to get that point across, so he starts out with a story of a shepherd that had 100 sheep, and he lost one. And now most of us would think 99 out of 100 is fantastic, but yet that shepherd did everything he could to find the one. Tells the story about a lady that had 10 coins, lost one. 90% pretty good, but not good enough for God, and so searches for that one. Then we come to today, what I think is the greatest story in the Bible. If it was the only story in the Bible, I think that we have the plan of salvation in this story. Now, when I do this in the Knowing God Ministry seminars, I do a couple of things to lay a foundation. I'm going to do this very quickly here. I ask, when I come to the story of the prodigal, I ask, how many of you are familiar with the story of the good daddy? And usually in a congregation, I'll get one or two hands. And then I'll say, oh, well, maybe y'all know it by a different title. How many of y'all are familiar with the story of the prodigal son? Well, then everybody obviously knows. One of the principles that I came across many years ago that helped change my attitude of the way I read the Bible, when I began to discover that every story in the Bible is about God. It is not about David. It is not about Abraham. It is not about Samson. And certainly, it's not about the prodigal son. In the stories, when I began to look at them with one question, how did God relate to this person in this experience? God becomes the hero. So thus, there's no way in the world that this parable should be called the prodigal son. It should be entitled the good daddy, because the daddy certainly is the hero. Why do I use the word daddy? Well, one of the names of God is Abba, A-B-B-A. It's only in the New Testament. It's found three times. Paul uses it twice, and he uses it in the terms of adoption. Back in the Roman times, if you were not born in the ruling class, you had no hope for anything. I mean, you were either a slave or low class. You had no chance, no education, no chance for a life. Paul says that every once in a while, the ruling class in Rome would find a special child and they would adopt it into their family. This took place for 3 days. It was a big thing in the village. And Paul says what happens is the child realizes that he comes from nothing with no chance, and he moves into a family where he has every opportunity presented to him. And when that child recognizes that, he cries out to his new daddy, Abba, Abba. He calls out, Daddy, Daddy. He is so thankful. The third time that the word daddy is used is in the Garden of Gethsemane, where Jesus, there as he's praying, almost near death, in fact, he would have died had God not sent angels there to nourish and support him. And in his greatest time in the garden, he cries out, Daddy, Daddy, if there's any way that I don't have to go through this, please take it away. Nevertheless, thy will be done. It's the most intimate word a son can use with his father, with his daddy, is that word Abba, daddy. I can never remember in my life ever calling my daddy father. You know, father is so stilted to me. Father, pass the mashed potatoes, please. I mean, who talks like that? It's daddy. And so the understanding of this story on the prodigal is twofold. Number one, daddy certainly fits the father of these two boys. And the second is, the story is not about the prodigal. The story is not about the elder brother. The story is about daddy. Now, Leroy has done something very special for this class. So, Leroy, I want you to come up and unveil what you brought to us. I appreciate it.
Well, since this is a special subject today, the best time I've ever heard Ernie give a talk, he had PowerPoints. So we figured we needed a PowerPoint.
Who remembers my PowerPoints for prayer meeting? What were they?
Now, there's a lot to be said about this picture, but it would take the rest of the classroom to do it. Right, your job is to keep it straight. That's your job.
Thank you, Leroy. Picture of the prodigal. So I appreciate that. Now, the prodigal story of the good daddy, the prodigal son, has always been special to me. In my late 20s, I came, of course, I knew the story all my life, obviously, but I began to study it for a different reason. And I'm going to share this. It's a little personal, but we're all friends. I have a brother who's about 5 years younger than me, and if there's ever a case of kind of a good son and son that had a lot of trouble, that's the story of me and my younger brother. Mill knows him. Roger knows him. Did you ever meet my brother? No, I didn't think so. See, he was smart. He stayed away from PQ. See, and my brother has struggled. In fact, as of today, he's up in Canada. He's homeless. And so he's been a struggle all his life. Good guy. Just a struggle. And so here I am working hard, have a business, trying to do good. My brother's just out there doing what he does, and my folks are helping him. You know, I mean, you know, $5,000 here, and getting him out of jail, and getting an attorney. So I didn't resent that, but I came across the prodigal, so I started studying the story of the prodigal son. What do you think I was trying to prove? Anybody? Pardon?
The older brother
had a case. The older brother had a case, exactly. And that's how I got interested in this parable beyond just being an interesting story. I spent about 2 years off and on trying to prove that the elder brother had a right to be kind of hacked off. Because who stayed and worked? And so did little Ernie. Now, work is defined very well. You know? I mean, you know, I got to be fair here. Work and Playboy kind of went through the same sentence at times. But little Ernie. See? And who had the best relationship with their daddy? Little Ernie. And yet, everything was going to help my poor brother, my mother, boo-hooing, you know. And so I tried to figure out the case for the elder brother. And after a long time, I found out absolutely there was no case. Because here's what I changed my mind. When Jesus gave this parable, Do you know who was listening intently and who the parable was given expressly for? Does anybody know that? Okay. Pardon?
For you and me.
For you and me, but who said the other word?
The Pharisees.
The Pharisees, which is you and me.
That's exactly right.
See, you're exactly right. It was given expressly to the Pharisees. This whole parable, plan of salvation, the Pharisees was right there, judgmental. And so Jesus starts out by saying, there was a man who had two sons. And you see, the Pharisees were just like me. They were trying to express how good they were. Now, I love my daddy. He passed away about 18 years ago. No, don't doubt that. I mean, but he was important. But they were trying to prove their love to God. And so Jesus gave this parable. Now, that's the context it's given in. And once I realized that, there was no defense for the elder brother because the Pharisees were the elder brother. Look at them Gentiles. They sin and we give offerings. They sin and we pay tithe. They sin and we keep the Sabbath. They were the elder brother. And so then I began my career of going through the prodigal with a different set of eyes. Now, do you think this story of the prodigal was new to the Pharisees? Do you know that this story is told many times in the Old Testament? Do you know when the first time that the story of the prodigal appears? In the Garden of Eden. Let me illustrate. What did God have? Two. Did they run from God when He came along after they sinned? Did they try to hide from God when they sinned? And did God pick them up where they were, take them by the hand, brought them to the east end of the garden, and there set up where they could come and worship? Let's go to the story of Samson. See, Samson, the story of the prodigal son is in the story of Samson. Chosen by God, a child of God. Gets waylaid by a woman named Delilah. What kind of pig pen did Samson go in? Where did he go?
Prison.
Prison. What happened to him in prison?
Blinded.
Pig pen. He's brought up for a big feast to make fun of. And who was there at the time when Samson called out? Who was there? Who?
God.
Look at the story of Jonah. Jonah has a message. What did Jonah do? He ran. What pig pen did he get in? The belly of a whale. Pretty bad, I would think. What does he do? Comes to his senses. Spit up. Delivers his message. By the way, I think one of the most fascinating things about the story of Jonah. Do you understand that Jonah... I'm getting to the prodigal, but I've got to set up a group. Do you understand that Jonah was one of the greatest evangelists that ever lived? Wow, do you imagine when he sent in his report to the general conference what that sucker looked like, Lloyd? Man, did he have baptism, baptism, and baptisms! How does the story end? He's sitting on a hill mad, pouting. But let me tell you the story of the prodigal that's the greatest in the Old Testament. And that's the children of Israel. Go to the book of Judges. Seven times the story of the prodigal son is repeated in the book of Judges. They have a relationship with Jesus. They run away from God. They fall into slavery and idolatry, into the pig pen. God comes along and pulls them out, restores them to where they are, and they turn right around and repeat the story 7 times. So when Jesus stood in front of the Pharisees and said, "A man had 2 sons," this was redefining, revealing, and edifying the story over and over of the prodigal in the Old Testament. So let's get into the story. Had 2 sons. The younger one came to him one day and said, "I can't wait, old man, for you to die. So give me my inheritance." My question to you this morning on this is, do you think this was the first time that the son made this request? Is this the first time that he made that request? Would any man in his right mind grant that if this was the first time? Have your children, grandchildren, ever come up with any crazy ideas? And did you say, "Hey, you know, I never thought of that. That's so crazy. I think you ought to go and do it." No. This son had begged, complained, pouted, gone to his mother, boo-hooed. Don't think for a second that the first request that any daddy would say, "Well, that's not good for you, but yeah, go ahead." No. But it come to a point where the daddy had no other choice than to let this son go on his way. God loves us. And when we start down a path, He will do anything He can to keep us from going down that path. He'll plead and talk and try to reason. But if we're set, He will say sorrowfully, "I've got to let you go." This is found in the book of Hosea, the 11th chapter, where the children of Israel were in such rebellion. They said to God, "We want nothing to do with you." And God said, "It was I who held you in my arms when you were born. It was I who held you by the hands and helped you walk. It was I who fed you. It was I who loved you with bonds of everlasting love. But you say, 'I have to go.'" And He says with tears, "I have no other choice but to leave you alone." And that's what happened here with the prodigal. Daddy wasn't mad, because daddies don't get mad. Daddy's hurt. They cry. Jeremiah, God says, "I look with you, and as I look in your situation, tears well up in my eyes and tears run down my cheek." The daddy cries when the boy leaves home. Now the boy has wine, women, and song. When you have money, people love you. When you have no money, have no use for you. And so we find the son, eventually out of all. And Jesus wants to make us understand that He does not care what we do. We're still a child of God. We are still loved by God. And so He takes a Jewish boy and puts him the lowest that a Jew could be. and that's in a pig pen. Fighting the pigs for the slop to eat, to live and survive. Now, can you draw me a picture of a Jewish boy? How could one get any lower than that? Pig pen, pigs, fighting for survival. Slop. Have you ever been in a pig pen? Have you ever fought for survival? Have you ever knocked a pig aside so you can get some of that slop and survive? Well, Luke says something that's very, very interesting. It says in one sentence, the boy came to his senses. How do you think that happened? You know, they say in a foxhole there are no atheists. I couldn't even get out of... What does Adventist schools have? Not to ROTC, but... MCC. I couldn't even get out of MCC, let alone get in a foxhole. So, no atheists in a foxhole. How did this boy come to his senses?
Same way we do, through the Holy Spirit's calling on
him. Okay. There's two powers working in our life. There's two powers working in your life. There's two powers working today in your life. One of them, no matter where you're at on your spiritual journey, wants to drag you lower. Because he absolutely hates you. And his desire is to see that you die and be dead eternally. But there's another power. What we miss was in that pig pen was Daddy. And I imagine the conversation went like this as that boy sat there and said, get out of here, you dirty pig. The food's mine. One power said, look at you. Look at where you're at. It's over for you. You ever felt that way? It's over. You're done. But the other power's in that pig pen. And the other power just says two words. Go home. You can't go home. What will your church think of you? You're an embarrassment to your church. They'll be horrified. Go home. Then here comes the cruelest one of them all. You can't go home because your family is disgraced. And furthermore, who cares anything about you? You see, that's the ultimate disappointment. Nobody cares. Your God doesn't care. Your church doesn't care. Your family doesn't care. And your friends don't care. And that other voice simply said two words, "Go home!" And that's how the boy came to his senses. Now, the interesting stage of this, how well did this boy know his daddy?
Not at all.
Who said not at all? Not at all! He believed in the voice strong enough to say, "Go home," that he got up and he left the pig pen. He had no concept of what his daddy was like. And so one of the greatest principles of Christian witnessing is that there is only one subject we must witness on. And that's the goodness of God. Notice the voice did not say, "Go home, but before you go home, take the 20th century Bible course." We would say, how ridiculous. And so this son has no concept of who his daddy is, what his daddy is like. And he has enough money. Now, this I hadn't figured out yet. Still working on it. But he has enough money to stop by the 7-Eleven and buy him some index cards and a pencil. Because as he starts home, what is he working on? His what?
His speech.
His speech. That's how we bring people back to God. Say, "We'd like for you to come back. But would you please begin to work on your speech?" So how do we know that he didn't understand his daddy? Was what was the first words in his speech? Dear what?
Father.
That nice formal word. Dear Father. And how did this boy, coming home, view himself in fitting in to his daddy's family? How did he view himself?
Servant.
The lowest of the low. I am not very good. I can just see him write his speech. Then he crosses out that, "I am not good enough." Oh, that doesn't sound right. "I am not worthy." The devil wants us to always be in a state of "I am not worthy." Always wants us to be in that state. Traveling through life, feeling I'm not worthy, has got to be one of the greatest burdens the devil can put on us. And so the prodigal comes to the only conclusion, "I'm going to tell my father that I have sinned and I am not worthy, and just let me start at the bottom of the heap." Well, Luke, being a man of few words, says that one day our daddy looks way off in the horizon and he sees his son. And Luke says, and the daddy ran. Now we think, what? So what? Oh, that's big time. That's big time. Let me tell you the difference between a daddy and a father. You see, in the Jewish custom, the father was head of the house. He was the man. And the custom was, is that when visitors came, family, visitors, whatever, the father stands on the front porch by the doorway and he waits for his visitors, family, whatever, to come up on the porch, and there he greets them. That's what fathers do. But let me tell you what daddies do. You see, every morning, daddies get up and they stare way off in the horizon, looking, waiting, hoping. And as soon as he said, "That could be, that is, that's my son," daddies run. I could just imagine the servants as they're sitting there, and all of a sudden that daddy takes off, and they go, "Wow, I didn't know the old man can even move." They're shocked. The son is shocked. But that's what daddies do. The son and the daddy meet. Servants looking. Daddy, what kind of shoes does this boy have on? None. And the boy reaches in his back pocket and he pulls out his index card and he says, "Dear Father, I have sinned and I am not worthy." What's the daddy doing? What's the daddy doing when this speech starts? Standing back and waiting and see, let's see if this boy's learned anything. Let's see if this boy's going to give a good speech. Let's see if this boy's humble. Let's see if this boy has the same arrogant demeanor as he did when he left. That's what fathers do. Daddies do what daddies do. He's not listening. He's hugging. He's kissing. He's crying. And he's hugging. And he's kissing again. He's thinking, "I'm so happy. What am I going to do?" And he looks down and he sees his son. Son's still trying to explain, "Well, now this is the way I think it ought to be." And he looks down and there's no ring on his son's hand. And he tells his servant, "Go get the ring and put it on his finger," which signifies he's part of the family. And then he looks down and he sees that this boy has no shoes. This was a sign in the Jewish deal of absolute poverty. And he says to his other servant, "Go get my son some shoes and bring them." Why do you think it was important for the daddy to have the shoes on the boy? Pardon? That's right. Why was it important for the daddy to do that? Was he embarrassed? Was he embarrassed that his son had no shoes? No. Who said that? You got it. is for the Son. You can't embarrass God. You can make Him throw up. Revelation says, I'd almost like to spew you out of my mouth. If you're lukewarm, you can make Him almost throw up. But you cannot embarrass your God. Wasn't for the boy. For him, ashamed. Was for the boy. He wanted the boy to understand, you're in my family. Yes?
I have a question.
Certainly.
He came to him, which he does to all of us. He brings the best robe that he has.
Getting to that.
Puts it on him.
Absolutely.
Not after he showers, before he showers.
Absolutely. Getting ahead of me. Don't get ahead of me. Don't get ahead of me. Excellent idea, because I'm getting to the robe. And then he says, what about the robe?
Get the finest.
You sure the finest?
Yeah, the best.
Yeah. Get the finest. Best we got. And then Clark's exactly correct. Wouldn't it have made sense, Clark, for him to say, now, son, got to get cleaned up. I got you some good clothes. That's what churches do. Do you understand that? That's what churches do. Now, go get cleaned up. Write out your speech. In fact, I think it would really be good if you gave your speech to the entire church body and get all cleaned up. And we're going to put a camera on you. We're going to watch you for 6 months to a year. And then if you're still kind of clean, oh, welcome into our family. That's what the devil wants you to believe. If you don't believe it, let me ask you a question. How many of you in your life has had something tragic happen or a struggle happen or something that you're hurt, you're crying, and your church family is the last people in the city that you want to know your situation? Don't raise your hand. And then he puts his robe, as Clark very fittingly says, on a dirty, nasty, pig-smelling boy. And then what's the final thing that daddies do when they have good news? Throw a party. Now, Rob gets on to me, but he's not here today. I like to say I think God's a party animal. But Rob doesn't like me to say that. But he's not here, so God's a party animal. Zechariah talks about him when somebody comes home, he gets up and he sings and he claps and he dances. We're told the angels in heaven sing. And the daddy does what daddies do when there's great joy in their life. They throw a party so that everybody understands, my son has come home. Now my old buddy, the elder brother, did not for 1 second enjoy his daddy's happiness. Because he was kind of like me. Till I woke up. Well, I'm the good son. And here, the one that's all the problems, you give it everything to. What's wrong with me? Do you see the story of salvation in this parable? It's all there. If that's all we had, it's there. Man has a relationship with God. Man does not want a relationship with God, and so he leaves. Man left to his own consequences, his own decisions, his own path is bound to end up in a pig pen. It's the natural consequences. All along on the journey to the pig pen was the daddy saying to the son, "Why don't you turn around and come back home? How can I help you? Why don't you come on back home?" But when the student is ready, the teacher can what?
Teach.
When the student, Angela, is not ready, can't get to him. And then the pig pen comes. Whatever it is, sickness, broke, whatever. Then that's when those two powers begin to really grind. Because now, in the pig pen, your salvation is at stake. There are no holds left. And the devil keeps saying, "You are not worthy. Nobody cares." So the principle of salvation is very simple. Relationship begins with God. Within us, when we are born, is a light that, left alone, will draw us to God. We run from that. We hit the bullpen, pig pen. And there's where God works the hardest. Why? Because the student has said, "It's a mess." Yes?
I'm sorry, folks, if I speak too much here.
That's fine.
I'm just moved by the gospel. And I've been of this opinion a good share of my life now. You're born saved, you choose to be lost. That's a magnificent thing. When he put that robe over this prodigal son, how did God see that prodigal son? He saw him without fault. You read in the story of redemption, when the devil goes before the throne of God to accuse you, those accusations are correct. What is the answer? "Depart from me, for there's no fault in you." God sees you as perfect. I've made up my mind, if I ever go to church again and somebody says, "Is there anybody here perfect?" I'm going to stand up. Am I perfect? I know I'm not. But God says I am in Jesus Christ. Am I going to call Him a liar? I'm not going to do it. I am a perfect human being in Jesus Christ. And so therefore, if I am perfect, so are you. So that better stop criticism right now. You are a child of God. And I heard the most beautiful thing on the TV the other day. This guy was great. He says he's a pastor. It wasn't church day. Some guy came knocking on the door of his church. And he finally went to see. He kept knocking. And he heard the guy outside the door. He says, "I've sold my soul to the devil. I've sold my soul to the devil." And he let him in to talk to him. He says, "No, you haven't. Now straighten up." And so they got him to talk. And he says, the guy says, "How do you know?" He says, "I know I've sold my soul to the devil. You say I haven't." And the guy says, "I'll tell you why. Because the devil can't afford you. You've been purchased with a price far beyond anything he could ever come up with. You were purchased with blood. He has not. Christ did. You are the child of God. You are perfect in Jesus Christ today, not semi-perfect." You go to Romans, it says he calls those things that are not as though they are. You go to Hebrews, and he says he has made perfect once and for all those he is making holy. Perfection comes first. At the moment you accept Jesus Christ, God sees you without sin.
Appreciate those thoughts. Question is, in your journey, where do you fit into this parable? Are you the prodigal? If you are, go home. It's that simple. Don't work on your speech. You see, that's where we get in trouble. Let me finish. I got 4 minutes. Thank you. Appreciate it. That's where we get into trouble. We spend too much time working on our speech. We spend too much time trying for God to understand that we're sorry. And will He move on in our life? That's the work of the devil, to put that guilt. There are times, as David did when he said, "Create in me a clean heart." But that's a relationship. Solomon says, "A righteous man falls down 7 times. What does he do? He gets up 7 times. That's us. A wicked man falls down once and does what? Stays down. That's the prodigal. And that's where the devil wants to put you. Every time you fall down, he wants to say, "Stay down. Go get your index cards. Write your speech. Work on telling God how sorry you are." So if you're the prodigal, know that you are loved and come home. If you're the elder brother, which represents the Pharisees, which represents the church of today, we need to look long and hard on how we treat people who make mistakes. How we treat people we do not agree with. How we treat people that say, "I need help." There are churches today, hopefully not the Arlington Church, but there are churches today that would not enjoy the party that God would give to a person who came home, and would not enter into the joy of God whose son came home. So if you're in that group, which I was in that group, on church boards at one time, "Well, we can't have this guy in here and tarnish our name. Work of the devil." Are you the elder brother as I was? Said, "Well, look at me. I do everything right. I keep the right day, give the right money. I do the right things. I work hard. And look at what's happening with this person. Everybody's feeling sorry and want to help." You see, could not enter into the joy of his daddy. You see, the elder brother had no daddy. Do you understand that? He had a father. Not by the daddy's choosing, by the elder brother's choosing. Why is this the greatest parable of all? Why is this the plan of salvation? Because I firmly believe with all my heart, and the ministry that I have the privilege with Rob to go out and share with, there is only one message to give. The son came home, dirty, filthy, no shoes. We don't even know what happened to the boy. But it doesn't make any difference, because what daddies do is they hug, they kiss, they give the best to them. That is the message that people in Arlington want to hear. God cares, and we're too busy working on minutia. Eat the right kind of food. Pay the right type of bill. I've often said, I'm running out of time, so what if the elder brother would have got to the prodigal first? Disaster. What if the righteous elder brother would have got? Disaster. The boy would have said, I was more loved by those pigs. Don't put our church, don't put us in that position of trying to teach a message that takes away from a daddy who welcomes home their son, their daughter, with no speech, because that is salvation. Dear Daddy, what a wonderful story, retold in the Old Testament over and over in many different ways. What it says to everyone here today, we are loved, we are children of God, and we want to spend eternity with you. And by the way, that's your greatest desire. How can we not love you? In Jesus' name, amen.